The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Oh, a free press. We still have one of those, don't we? Sort of.
Once again, the big story is Trump's policy of taking immigrant children from their parents at the border. Now, there are two ways to look at this story. Either you can be horrified.
Yeah.
Or you can work for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Take Secretary of Homeland Security and stepmom flushing
Please.
Pictures of your real mom down the toilet. Kirstjen Nielsen. Yesterday, Nielsen defended this policy at the Daily press briefing. Now, normally, that press briefing job is handled by White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, seen here in her happy place. But Huckasands didn't want to do the briefing amid questions on child separation policy. Sarah, you think you don't want to talk about child separation policy? Try doing it on a comedy show. Oh, you must love the Trump administration, Stephen. The sadness just writes itself.
Yeah.
Listen up. You don't get to tag out here, Sarah, because it's not really you up there. You're just Donald Trump's mouthpiece, or whatever part the lies come out of. And it's not personal. It's not personal. It's nice. It's not personal. You're just the vehicle. You're like a vestigial twin that just grew out of Trump's neck last summer.
Ew.
It's just a mass of hair and teeth, but if you poke it with a stick, it goes. Ask and answer. So your administration owns locking up children. But if kids in cages is too much for you to defend, there is one option. You could resign. This is the
yep.
White House, not an abandoned Walmart. You're
Ooh.
Allowed to leave.
Ooh. Stephen Colbert. You know, that job has got to be the most difficult job in the world these days. It's not funny. It's not easy being funny when things are so dire. So the orange one today obviously admitted that things are getting to him. He had a gaggle of sycophants, of Republican sycophants in the cabinet room, during which Trump said he will sign something today to stop the practice of family separation.
We're meeting right now on immigration, and we are very strong at the border. We're very strong on security. We want security for our country. The Republicans want security and insist on security for our country, and we will have that. At the same time, we have compassion. We want to keep families together. It's very
important.
I'll be
signing something
in a little while that's going to do that, and the people in this room want to do that, and
yeah,
they're working
right.
on various pieces of legislation to get it done. But I'll be doing something that's somewhat preemptive, but ultimately will be matched by legislation, I'm sure. We're having a lot of problems with Democrats. They don't want to vote for anything. They don't care about lack of security. They really would like to have open borders where anybody in the world can just flow in, including from the Middle East, from anybody, anywhere. They can just flow into our country. Tremendous problems with that. Tremendous crime caused by that. We're just not going to do it. I do want to say that because we're all so busy, and I just mentioned to the congressman and the senators in the room that we are going to cancel and postpone tomorrow's congressional picnic.
Oh, he's going to cancel and postpone tomorrow's congressional picnic because they're so busy. You know, it's nothing to do with the optics of tearing screaming babies away from their mother's arms. Deep breath. I've been trying to breathe deeply all day today. I'm not having an easy go of it. Yesterday, I told you about my struggles with depression. And this is not making things any easier. But, you know, I guess the silver lining here is that though it may not seem to be the case, there is other news happening, believe it or not, some of it very important. It's not all just this nation turning into a fascist authoritarianism regime. I can't even get the words out. It's so sad what is going on. So over the past week or so, I've gotten a few alerts from Greg Palast, some good news, some not so good. Hi, Lenny. It's Nicole Sandler calling for Greg.
Yeah, he's just picking up.
Okay.
Bye.
Hey, Greg Palast.
Hey.
I was just explaining to the listeners that though it may not seem to be the case, there is other news going on, and some of it very important. It just seems we get inundated with stuff that takes over our psyches. I don't know about you, but I'm devastated by this family separation stuff that's happening. I cannot believe the mess we've devolved into. All due to this orange maniac in the Oval Office.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I would note I'm particularly sympathetic because my grandmother and my uncles came into the nation, into America, which saved their lives illegally.
Oh, wow.
And my father was the anchor baby. All three of my uncles, my two uncles and my father, both served in the war, in World War II, but... And I will say, La Migra did catch my grandmother just shy of her 100th birthday.
Wow.
Send her back.
Wow.
My father, send her back, wherever
wow.
that is.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, I'm laughing, but I'm only here because the America was less cruel at one time.
Yeah.
And let's return to that.
Yeah, well, we're pretty cruel right now. But there is other news going on. And while
yes.
this horrific news is just eating away at my heart and probably, you know, the hearts and the psyches of feeling people everywhere, there's other important news going on. And over the past week or so, I've gotten a few alerts from you, some good news, some not so good. But I thought it was time to invite
yes.
you back on the show to tell us what's going on. So for those who don't know, and I know you've got a lot of fans in my especially my YouTube chat room. It's the Greg Palast fan base there. Greg is the author of several New York Times bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and Armed Madhouse. You know Greg Palast through his investigative reports for BBC Television, The Guardian, Democracy Now, and Rolling Stone, and of course his films. Greg released the post-election update of his film The Best Democracy Money Can Buy: The Case of the Stolen Election. You can get the film on Amazon and Prime or at gregpalast.com. So Greg, over the last week or so, like I said, I've gotten a few alerts from you, and all of varying degrees of importance, but all pretty big news. I guess we start
yes.
with the first alert I got from you was a little over a week ago about the court stopping Kris Kobach's cross-check in Indiana. That in and of itself was pretty big news, yes?
Yes, so many skirmishes in Indiana. Well, Kris Kobach's cross-check, let's go back. Is Kris Kobach of Kansas, or can't remember the name, just think KKK. The Republican Secretary of State running for governor. He is Trump's, well, vote thief in chief. He's the guy who was put in charge of that vote fraud hunting commission, which didn't find any fraudulent voters, but then was dissolved when they tried to have secret and illegal meetings. So they had to dissolve the commission. But Kobach's not done. The cross-check program is one in which Kris Kobach is proving, according to Donald Trump, that 3 million people voted illegally,
right.
that twice That's not. And you know, if it's just a question of Trump's ego, that's how he lost supposedly the electoral vote, it's much more serious. They're removing voters by the hundreds of thousands based on the accusation that they have moved or voting that voters are voting twice, registered in two different states. In Iowa, the NAACP took on the cross-check program because Chris Kobach sent Iowa a list of almost 250,000 Iowans whom they said were actually registered in two different states and can vote twice in two states. And they're removing these people from the voter rolls. And now the court said, you can't do that. And they cited, the NAACP in its suit cited the fact that I got my hands on a big chunk of the list that was sent by Chris Kobach. He's, by the way, we've asked him for the list and he's been stonewalling us, but
no.
We got a chunk of it, the Iowa list. And it was filled, the national list, it was filled with voters, basically voters of color. How do they know if someone's voted twice? Well, Mr. Garcia, believe it or not, they found a Jose Garcia in Iowa. I'm not making up this instance. This is really true. And they found a Jose Garcia in Virginia.
Wow.
And they said, obviously, that's the same voter. Because Jose Garcia is definitely not a common name for a Republican. And so that is literally their evidence, the first and last name. The courts, the federal court threw that right out and said you cannot remove people just because they're on Chris Kobach's list. That's the good news.
Right.
And I'm happy that I was able to provide the information to the NAACP that got that thrown out. But, I didn't have a lot of time to celebrate.
No, because then the Supreme Court got involved, right?
Yes. Now we get to the Supremes, 5-4, the five grand inquisitors, the GOP majority, which has never found a racial purge program that they didn't fall in love with. Same program, two things happened, cross-check and something else. In Ohio, and this has been misreported by the papers, by the way.
Okay.
The case in Ohio has been reported that if you fail to vote, you can lose your vote, and the Supreme Court said that's okay. They can't do that because it's a direct violation of the National Voter Registration Act of 93. So if it's – even the court said you can't do that, it violates the National Voter Registration Act, the NVRA, then how come the court said, well, Ohio removed 500,000 people, and that's okay? So the ACLU, which brought the case, is kind of stunned. What happened? Here's what happened. The court said – they didn't remove these people just because they voted, didn't vote. They removed these people because they used non-voting as evidence that they moved, away.
Uh-huh.
Now, how is non-voting evidence you didn't move away? They sent them a postcard. So you didn't get removed from the voter rolls if you didn't vote. You got removed from the voter rolls if you didn't vote, and that triggered sending you a postcard. You don't return the postcard, and you get removed from the voter rolls. They say, well, they didn't return the postcard. That's proof positive that they moved. Now, Nicole, excuse me, we have something called a change of address form.
We do.
So the state knows from the post office, which is a public record, which is sent to the states. We have tax forms. We have utility bills. We know who's moved. We can say that. We have databases that are publicly available that can give you 99.9% total accuracy. In fact, sending a postcard, and the Supreme Court did not consider this, and we're kind of lucky because we get reconsideration, that when you send someone a postcard and it doesn't come back, that's proof that they got it, not proof that they didn't, because it would come back to address the unknown if someone
right,
had moved.
Right.
So they used this purge by postcard business. That was really going on. Now, here's why it's dangerous. Purge by postcard, it was 500,000 voters in Ohio. Now, the court said, think about that. Ohio targeted 1.5 million voters. They sent out 1.5 million postcards, supposedly. 500,000 people were removed. That's 20% of Ohio moved in a single year.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Where's the evidence of that? That 20% of Ohio moved, but these are the people who had their registrations removed. Now, it's not just anyone. It's a wonderful trick, the postcard trick. because we know this. If you send a white suburbanite in their 60s who is a homeowner in a suburb, the chance they'll return an official card from the government is over 90%. The chance that a young voter of color, like 18 to 25 new voters,
right,
low-income voters, et cetera, are going to return a card is way less than half.
Sure.
There's a multiple difference between who would return the postcards. And they know this. That's why the postcard gimmick is terrific. In fact, I sent the postcard, which is it's a piece of junk mail. And you go to gregpalace.com, you can see this piece of junk mail. And we had an expert, Mike Wychocki, who is a junk mail expert. That's what he does. And he helps companies like Dell figure out how to get you to look at your postcard and respond and buy things, right?
Mm-hmm.
He says, this violates the 7 rules of getting people to respond to a postcard. Every one of them, it's almost as if, and he's not going to describe what's in their brains, but he does say this postcard looks as if it were designed not to be noticed, not to be returned, to be thrown in the garbage.
Wow.
It's deliberate, and who designed it? Guess who?
Chris Kobach
of Kansas,
sure.
Our favorite vote thief in chief from, Trump's basic vote thief
Amazing.
Henchman.
Amazing. So the state of Ohio, Supreme Court upholds Ohio's voter purge efforts, which just means that if you are, especially in Ohio, but anywhere you are, you need to check on your voter registration. Do it regularly. Do it monthly. Make sure your voter registration is in effect so that you can vote. Because,
well, yeah.
Right?
That's one way to defeat them. One thing I found with all these massive purge programs, 500,000 people in Ohio lost their vote. If they checked their vote 3 months before the election,
mm-hmm.
and they say, well, I've been voting in the same place for 20 years. Too bad, buddy. You could still be purged, but you can go online at your Secretary of State. For any Secretary of State, all the states have an online system where you can correct, check, or re-register if need be. I had to do that, by the way, in California. You think I was actually on a radio show trying to show you, here's how you actually re-register, and I use my own name, and guess what? No such registrant. So don't take that chance. The other thing is that we are fighting back. I want to mention the other thing that the mainstream media completely missed in the Ohio case. Not only did they misunderstand that it was about whether you moved. And by the way, why can you remove voters from voter roll if they've moved? It's not really dangerous. People don't vote twice.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is that's authorized by the Help America Vote Act, which is 2003. It was written by Karl Rove and George Bush.
Of course it was.
So when Bush tells you he's going to help you vote,
yep.
Look out. That said you could be removed if the state has evidence you have moved. And their evidence, again, was being on missing an election. And by the way, just so you know about missing elections, in places like Cleveland, you have local elections for legislature, local congressional elections, et cetera, where they have these gerrymandered stacked black districts. So they suck out all the black voters and dump them into a single district so they can have no effect on 5 surrounding districts, so black people effectively lose their right to affect the election. In that kind of apartheid ghetto district of all black voters, they have a lot of uncontested elections. There's really nothing to vote for. You got one person on the ballot.
Right.
There's no contested election. So people say, it's not worth bothering.
Right.
Well, guess what? That's evidence you've moved.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. They're using that.
There was another story, though, that happened on Monday, wasn't it, where a U.S. District Court judge, I think her name is Julie Robinson, a Bush appointee, struck down Kobach's proof of citizenship voter registration law, finding it in violation of the National Voter Registration Act and the Constitution. And she admonished Kobach, sanctioning to pay, I think, $50,000 in ACLU legal bills due to his contempt in having misled the court. And this one I found particularly lovely. She ordered Kobach to attend 6 hours of law school to study up on federal and state courtroom procedures.
Yes. Okay. Kobach, who is running for governor of Kansas, doesn't know toot about what you do in a courtroom. Wow. He was a law professor. By the way, very dangerous. He graduated from Harvard, Yale, and Oxford. Ooh. He is no fool, and he was a law professor, but he didn't know anything about courtroom procedure. So he was driving the judge insane, not knowing the basics of how you handle yourself in a courtroom.
Wow.
And so that she said, you know, go back to school. And what I think she really resented, she knew he was using the courtroom as basically a grandstand to run for governor, and that he wasn't really trying the case. He was running for office, abusing the court in that way. And she could have, and he refused, dead refused. He'd removed people he said were, you know, potential alien voters, stopped people from voting. 36,000 Kansans were not able to vote in 2016, despite the fact that she ordered them back on the rolls. She charged him with contempt of court twice, and now deliciously made him pay the ACLU. And one thing he's doing, which is harming his campaign for governor, by the way, is that he is demanding that the state of Kansas cover his legal fees, cover his contempt. He wants the state of Kansas to pay for his contempt citation, and I assume the cost of going back to law school. The other is that, however, I'm very concerned. Here's what happened in that case. Chris Kobach, and you'll see this in my film, Best Democracy, Money Could Buy, is that he demanded that if you register to vote in Kansas, you have to prove you're a citizen. Now, you may say, well, that sounds reasonable. Why, you have to be a citizen to vote. How do you prove you're a citizen? We're not Red China. We don't have citizenship cards or chips in our brains yet.
They're coming, right?
So, yeah. They're coming. And so I'm laughing, but what else could
I know?
So he's demanding proof of citizenship. Proof of citizenship, there's really only two main records. Record one is a passport, which is, you know, for the white and wealthy traveling worldwide.
Right.
And two is your original birth certificate or certified copy. Good luck getting that from mom. Mm-hmm. What it turns out is that the 36,000 voters who were blocked were overwhelmingly in two groups. One, young people who don't have a passport yet or don't have access to their original birth certificate. The court asked Kobach, by the way, to find one single voter in that group who was an alien. He couldn't name one. He blocked 36 Americans from voting. And by the way, two of the people who were plaintiffs in the case were members of the United States Air Force.
Wow.
He blocked two Air Force officers from voting because they had trouble getting their documents. And no, being in the military is not proof of citizenship. No, not your driver's license. No, not your Social Security number. That's not proof of citizenship. And so he blocked two Air Force officers. So the court, district court, threw that out. A very angry judge who, by the way, could have thrown him in jail for his second contempt citation, but I think she wisely decided not to make him a martyr. I am afraid of this. I'm afraid that Kobach, knowing him well, and I've hunted him down for years, and he calls me a lot, by the way, to try to get me to change my investigative findings.
Huh.
Fat chance, Mr. Secretary. I am afraid that he is smiling because he's going to the Supreme Court where he could well win the citizenship proof nonsense.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
And I'm very, very concerned about that.
So there's a mixture of good news and bad.
Yes.
As is the case all these days. Unfortunately, it's been more bad than good lately. Greg Palast, thank you for staying on top of this. Because right now, I mean, our only hope out of this mess that we're in is through the vote. And it's through...
Well, let me... mention something else to give the vote a chance.
Yeah,
I am also filing suit against Kobach and John Husted, his henchman, GOP Secretary of State from Ohio. And in Kansas, what I've done is we are giving them 90-day notice this week of filing a federal lawsuit. So Kobach gets to go to court again if he doesn't turn over his lists of people that are marked for purge and the lists of people he's given other states to be marked for purge, 25, 26 states in all. We are actually notifying all those states to turn over the records given them by Kobach, who is on his purge list. And we are going to prove, by the way, one way to overcome the Ohio decision is to prove that the people on that list have not moved. If you go to gregpalace.com or you watch my film, you'll see a guy named Donald Webster. Mm-hmm. He is one of the people on that purge list who could be removed because he is supposedly have evidence he's moved to the state of Virginia. His name is Donald Alexander Webster, and there's a guy named Donald Eugene Webster in Virginia. And so that's evidence that Donald Webster, Alexander Webster, moved from Dayton, Ohio. I met with Donald Alexander Webster in his home in Dayton, Ohio. I can swear to you that he is absolutely there. He's been there for years. He hasn't moved, and he's never used the name Eugene. But he is subject to purge if he misses this postcard, which he says he's never received.
Oh, my.
You wouldn't even notice it. And, of course, don't be surprised. This is a black man. Because the way that they do these lists, they are violently prejudiced in targeting voters of color. And we are going to get those lists. I've got well over a million names from Kobach's list, which he doesn't want me to have. But we are demanding he turn over the entire list, and we're going to prove that obviously these people are still there. They haven't moved.
Mm-hmm.
And save their votes. So it's a massive, massive amount of litigation. I have a great firm, Jeannie Meyer's firm, great plaintiff's firm, which is taking on the case without charge to us in 25 states, ACLU in Kansas, Reverend Jesse Jackson in Illinois, and we have some other folks ready to take this on.
Great. Well, Greg Palace, thank you for all your hard work on this and for staying on top of it, because it's such important work that the best I can tell, you're the one who's doing it. So thank you
for
keeping us informed. People can always find you at gregpalace.com. Of course, I'll link to you from my blog today at NicoleSandler.com. Greg, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Nicole. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye. All right. It is a busy Wednesday. There is breaking news that I'll read to you from The Hill. Breaking news. The president on Wednesday signed an executive order intended to end family separations at the U.S. southern border, a partial reversal of his hardline stance on illegal immigration. Trump told reporters in the Oval Office before signing the document that his zero tolerance policy against illegal border crossing will remain in place, but the order will allow children and their parents to remain together while in custody. Let's wait for more details, because that's all we got. All right, we'll take a brief time out. We'll get to what's news. Sorry, it's another depressing one for you today. And then back on the other side with our old friend Jason Leopold next. Lots to talk about today. It's the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. I read the news
today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
As more details emerge about the Trump administration's policy of separating families who attempt to enter the U.S. at our southern border, they become more disturbing and distressing. At the end of her Tuesday night broadcast, Rachel Maddow broke down as she read breaking news about the fate of some of the youngest children taken from their parents.
We've been talking about this story all night, but the AP has just broken some new news. This has just come out from the Associated Press. This is incredible. Trump administration officials have been sending babies and other young children.
Oh.
Hold on. To at least three can we put up the graphic of this? Thank you. Do we have it? No. Three tender age shelters in South Texas. Lawyers and medical providers. Just I think I'm gonna have to hand this off. Yeah. Sorry. That does it for us tonight. We'll see you again tomorrow. Now it is time for The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell, where he is live in Brownsville, Texas.
I know how you feel,
Rachel. Here's the AP story she was attempting to read. Trump administration officials have been sending babies and other young children forcibly separated from their parents to at least three tender age shelters in South Texas. Lawyers and medical providers who have visited the tender age shelters describe playrooms of crying preschool age children in crisis. Decades after the nation's child welfare system ended the use of orphanages over concerns about the lasting trauma to children, the administration is standing up new institutions to hold Central American toddlers that the government separated from their parents. The thought that they are going to be putting such little kids in an institutional setting, I mean, it's hard for me to even wrap my mind around it, said Kay Beller, vice president for programs at Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services. Toddlers are being detained. Meanwhile, over on Fox so-called News, former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski mocked a story about a 10-year-old with Down syndrome who was taken from her mother. At least they had Democratic strategist Zach Petkanis on to push back.
I read today about a 10-year-old girl with Down syndrome who was taken from her mother and put in a cage.
What?
I read about a did you say want to a 10-year-old with Down syndrome
what
being
I
taken
said
from
is
her
you
mother?
Can pick anything
How
you
dare
want
you?
Up, but the bottom line
How
is very clear.
You?
When you cross
How absolutely
the border
dare you,
illegally,
you
How have
dare
given
you?
Up the
we
rights
have infants
of this country.
Being taken from
Look,
their
we
mothers.
Are a country with
we
borders.
Infants
we are a country of laws.
Stolen from
and
their mothers and put into cages.
This country illegally. Your parents understand
this.
They understand.
Nobody can hear when you both talk. So
when you cross the border
how
illegally,
dare you, sir?
When
how
you commit
dare
a crime, you?
You
are taken away from
she
your
has
family.
Down syndrome and she was taken
right.
from her mother.
All right.
To make that story even worse, this little girl was sent to a Texas shelter, even though her father, a legal U.S. resident, lives just an hour down the highway. Trump spoke on Tuesday before the National Federation of Independent Businesses, during which he doubled down on his inhumane policy.
We want to solve this problem. We want to solve family separation. I don't want children taken away from parents. And when you prosecute the parents for coming in illegally, which should happen, you have to take the children away.
And then he literally walked over and hugged the flag. Seriously. On Tuesday evening, Trump went to the Capitol to meet with House Republicans. He didn't take any questions, though members said he seemed agnostic about a solution. Trump did find the time to take a cheap swipe at Congressman Mark Samford, who last week lost his primary by, quote, congratulating him on his race in front of the caucus. At the House Oversight Committee hearing on the Inspector General's report dealing with, yes, Hillary Clinton's emails, a couple of Democrats attempted to use their time more constructively, starting with Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York.
Mr. Chairman, before we hear from the Inspector General, I feel compelled to say something about a topic that is a more immediate priority. We have all seen the pictures of immigrant children ripped apart from their parents at the border. These children are not animals.
Order.
They are not bargaining chips. They are not leveraged to help President Trump build his wall. They are children who have been forcibly removed from their parents in our name. Every day that they are separated from their parents is a day we do irreparable harm to their health and well-being. The United States should be better than this. We should not put children in cages. The minute this hearing adjourns, sooner if we can,
Mr. Chairman,
I hope
regular
that our
order.
Committees can work together.
Gentleman from Virginia has requested regular order.
Delay. Thank
the
you,
gentleman from New York has been given more time than would have been afforded the other side had we pulled something like that.
And Elijah Cummings spoke for most of us.
We sent letter after letter asking these committees to investigate the Trump administration's policy, which is now resulting in child internment camps. That's what I said, child internment camps. But we have gotten no response. We all should be able to agree that in the United States of America, we will not intentionally separate children from their parents. We will not do that. We are better than that. We are so much better.
Call your members of Congress today at 202-224-3121 and visit familiesbelongtogether.org to join in the protest.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then,
Just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
All right. Hi, I'm Nicole Sandler, back with you here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. And there are no words to describe the times that we're living through. Jason Leopold is a senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News, one of my favorite journalists. Now, we were supposed to speak a few weeks ago. He had a big story that broke, and then Jason got sick. And he was out sick for a couple of weeks. And then I got sick. And finally, together today, here we are. Jason, you there?
Yes. How are you, Nicole? I hope you're feeling better.
Feeling better than I was last week. How about you?
Feeling much better.
That's good.
It's been a, kind of worn down, you know, from just traveling and covering some pretty big stories. And it was nice to get a bit of a break, even though it was spent mostly in bed.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know about you. I mean, I told this story yesterday. When I was out sick last week, it was sort of a combination of physical, like a virus that just overtook my body, and mental anguish. So,
yeah.
And they feed off of one another, and it feeds off of the news. And as I'm lying in bed watching the news, I felt sicker and sicker with each passing day, because this country is in a place of insanity. It's utter insanity.
Yeah. It's true. I was thinking last night that, despite the fact that these are, unusual times, troubling times, that I personally am grateful that, that I'm a journalist, that I am supported and have the ability to, to go out and shed light on what's taking place and what's happening and what the, what the stories are, despite the fact that, we also take a pretty serious beating, not only from the president and others in this administration, but from much of the public as well. And I think that the immigration policies, the separation of children, just, for me, it just made me, because I'm a person as well and, and a citizen, and so it makes you angry. But then I thought about how, what I could do as a journalist, and to sort of hopefully, shed some light on this. And it's interesting because, much of what has been happening over the past week, certainly over the past few days, has really, for me, reminded me, and I'm not trying to compare the two, but it has reminded me of Guantanamo and my coverage of Guantanamo over the years, and just many similarities in terms of just trying to pry loose information, largely in which the, at the time, the Bush administration stated that it had the, the legal right to indefinitely detain people, no matter who they were, post 9/11. And as we know now, many of those individuals were, were innocent. They were held, outside of the law.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt so determined at that time just to try and obtain information so I can, educate the public and let the public know, what's being done in their name. And I feel it's, it's the same thing here. And, the difference now between then is that, we have this it's beyond a 24-hour news cycle. You have Twitter that is largely driving, in many instances, the news cycle.
Yeah.
And we have a president, obviously, who takes to Twitter, and his aides who take to Twitter, and his former aides, and, their comments are incendiary. So it's, it's sort of a little rant I have, but it's, I'll just note that it's, while at the same time just being really proud to be able to function as a journalist, it's also incredibly difficult right now because there are a lot of people who work in government who, you know, are just simply career government officials who want to talk and who want to share information but are just so frightened and to some degree shell-shocked that they just don't know what to do. So it certainly makes the job, you know, that much more difficult in terms of getting the information. But, you know, back to your original point, I mean, it's, you know, it's the type of, you know, what we're seeing unravel is the type of real time, you know, these events that are taking place in real time, it can be emotionally exhausting and debilitating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, this is an administration that's just so inept in everything it does. They don't have a clue in how to run a government. I mean, I just saw a tweet from Kyle Griffin at NBC News. Here's the link to the executive order Trump signed. The first link now goes to a 404 error because the URL and title on the web page misspelled the word separation. I mean, they can't even get something that simple correct. They're so inept. And then, of course, we have no idea what this means. Just the practice they've been following for the past, few weeks, but that has been thrust into our living rooms for the past week and has been making us all nauseous. Trump is saying, this has been in effect for decades and it's legislation. And he could have fixed it with a phone call. Of course, he did it with an executive order, although we don't know what the fix is yet. Do we? Have you read anything yet? Do we know what it is?
Well, I just got a copy of the executive order. It just popped in to my inbox from the White House. And titled Executive Order Affording Congress an Opportunity to Address Family Separation.
Misspelled.
I'm assuming that's what you were referring to previously, right?
That's it.
Yeah. So that's, it more or less, you know, in section one of this, it states the policy. It says under our laws, the only legal way for an alien to enter this country is at a designated point of entry at an appropriate time. That's interesting. When an alien enters or attempts to enter the country anywhere else, that alien has committed at least the crime of improper entry. So, I mean, essentially what this appears to be is this executive order stating that they'll continue to keep families together, that they will now keep these families together. However, they'll continue to be prosecuted and in some cases held indefinitely.
Right.
It does just, again, it seems to be just at a glancing at it, and I certainly need to give it a better read, that families will stay together. But I think that what we've seen over the past year and a half unfold, well, let's see what happens. Let's see how that sort of shakes out before, you know, stating that will, in fact,
do anything,
you know, be the case.
Right. Right.
Because, you know, as we've seen, certainly at some of these entry points and in other states where Customs and Border Patrol and ICE are enforcing, the policy, even with a policy or even with an executive order in place, there are still bad things that happen, and that have been happening. And, you know, it doesn't address right now the fact that there are, you know, thousands of children who have been separated from their, you know, from their parents or their parent, and there's no, we don't have an understanding yet of how they will be reunited, whether they will be reunited, whether this applies to, is this retroactive, and you know, will there be a process now in place for reuniting them? Oh. So I think that, you know, like much of what happens with this administration, when it comes to, you know, policy, it's trying to figure out what's what, because there are many instances where even high-level officials have no idea what's happening, or have not been notified about what's happening and what they're supposed to do now. So here's an executive order. We sort of heard early today that the Secretary for the Department of Homeland Security was seeking an executive order. How that's trickled down to the officers and agents who are enforcing or have been enforcing whatever their policy is remains to be seen. So
it's
still early.
It's still early. And then there are all those really disturbing reports of the fact that there are some kids who, you know, parents have already been deported while the kids are still here. And there seems to be no mechanism to reunite these families. Like some of these kids may be lost to their parents forever. And then you've got, kids in these these detention centers, and the staff is not allowed to hold them. They're babies, for God's sakes. Jason, you're a parent.
Yeah.
Can you imagine not being able to comfort a crying child? I mean, it's just so inhumane. It's so cruel, and it bears.
It seems evil. It's really what it just seems. I mean, this really just seems evil. I'm not sure. There's really any other way to describe it. I mean, it just truly, certainly inhumane, but they know it's inhumane. They know that this is, a policy that has been condemned. And to me, there's really no justification for it other than it's just, it's just evil. So, and I think it's, obviously interesting with the, extreme backlash that has resulted that, they quickly reversed, what it appears reversed the policy saying, okay, they can remain together. But it's still a very aggressive immigration policy and enforcement.
Oh, yeah. And again, we haven't seen this play out yet. We don't know what the future holds with this executive order. I guess we'll find out over the course of the next, 24 to 48 hours. But I can't imagine it'll be anything good because look who we're dealing with. So Jason Leopold, you at BuzzFeed, you're tasked with doing deep investigative reporting, and you've done a lot of reporting on the Russia probe. I got to tell you, I've got two chat rooms going on during my show, one at NicoleSandler.com and one on the YouTube page. And there's a strong disagreement as to whether there's any there with Russia. And I think this goes along with the discrediting of the media. Now, I was one of those people who used to, bemoan the fact, that the media was less than above board in many cases. The New York Times sort of seemed to have it in for Hillary Clinton. There are biases implicit. But I got to say, since Trump took office, I think the media as, a monolith for the most part. If you could do away with Fox and Sinclair and the state-run, news agencies, has been doing a really good job under insurmountable odds, going up against just the most heinous shit that one could throw against the wall and try to make sense of it. I don't know how you get through it all. My eyes glaze over. I can't keep track of it. So let me ask you in the basest way, bring it down to basics. Is there any there? Was there Russian complicity in the Trump campaign? Is there something? Is Mueller going to find something there?
As far as the special counsel's investigation goes, I mean, I couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one thing I can tell you is that there is absolutely not a single person who is working for the Office of Special Counsel who's speaking to the media. I mean, there's just nothing coming out of that office.
Mm-hmm.
So
as
I may have mentioned
this
to you before. I think that much of the, leaks and information that we're hearing are from defense attorneys and from people who have appeared before the special counsel, perhaps in some instances before a grand jury, and you can tell from their line of questioning, perhaps where they're going. As far as, you know, Russia infiltration of the campaign, I mean, I do think that there's evidence there, a lot of it, that, you know, that we've seen. Whether that has, resulted in, a collusion, I mean, I couldn't even answer that either.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is a lack of, of evidence, but that is to be expected when you have an investigation going on. And I think that, again, this to me, what I'm so interested in, aside from this, by the way, is just the psychology of how people sort of, react. And we're as I mentioned, living in this sort of, real-time news cycle where things are just happening. And so, our weeks are, we see so many different news events that unfold,
mm-hmm.
really big news, just at the expense of other things. So I think that the public is one, they're asking the right questions, and I think it's absolutely fine to be skeptical, because if they do come out, if the special counsel comes out with a finding or a report that says there was collusion and they present the evidence to back it up, that is what it is. I think there's a bit of impatience right now. There's a little, for many people, there's an emotional, they're very emotional about this administration. And I understand that. And I think, based on what we've seen over the past week, that's certainly, to be expected, but, it's hard. I guess my point is perhaps it's hard to be patient to see what they come away with.
Yeah.
But I will say this, that, having been on the ground reporting it and continuing to do it, we have no idea what the special counsel is looking at. We know, individuals and events because of, mostly what's been reported, but there is a lot more that we just don't know. So I don't think there's anything wrong with the fact that there are people who have cast a, sort of, or have a skeptical view of what is taking place and whether there was any there regarding
mm-hmm.
collusion. I would simply say it's, got to see what they find.
Right.
But in the meantime, there certainly has been, for crying out loud, lots of bizarre meetings and discussions with various, figures, from, it's not just the Russian government, it's from, from people who are trying to, provide the Trump campaign at the time with information, with emails, with other things. So, I do think that it's, the investigation's been, I think it's just been a year at this point. Special counsel was appointed, if I'm not mistaken, in May of 2017. So, a year is not a long time.
No. And yet you've got the talking heads on state run TV, also known as Fox,
right.
Trying to talk about how this has been going on for, longer than any other investigation in history, and it's time to put an end to it, and it's a witch hunt, and it's
right.
And
I do think that people feel like it's been going on because
yeah.
it's certainly, honestly, it does feel like it's been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the, the days of Ken Starr, we basically had the, an early version of the internet, but for the most part, you had the, the television news networks and the newspapers.
Right.
So it didn't feel like you were just constantly, compared to this, I should say, that, you're just being bombarded. So it feels like, quite a bit of time has passed. The fact that we're a year and a half into this administration itself is,
we've all aged a decade.
Yes. It's like, whoa, look how much has happened. Look at what, has transpired in a year and a half. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in. So, it does feel that way.
And then you're dealing with,
I do get what people are saying.
Right.
I think that, there also is, the reality is that, look, when they came out, when the intelligence community came out with their report last year and made these, you know, high confidence statements about Russia collusion, they really didn't offer much evidence, true, real, you know, concrete evidence. So naturally, people are going to, you know, request that, you know, there's additional evidence and be skeptical of what the intelligence community says. And it's, you know, it's this weird balancing act right now where, you know, on one hand, you know, in October of 2016, you had the Democrats that were furious at James Comey,
yep,
you know, then the head of the FBI.
Yep.
Some of whom, if I'm not mistaken, some reports, you know, demanded that he resign.
Yes.
Based on the letter that he provided about, you know, Hillary Clinton's emails. And then, you know, look now, he's to some folks, he's a hero. He's, you know, a person who has, you know, stood up to, you know, to power. And there's talk of, you know, that you know, this is his firing will, you know, be part of obstruction charges. I mean, it's so kind of wishy-washy to suddenly, you know, on the one hand, trust the FBI, right? When we know that the FBI has acted in certainly in cases in years past, not very ethically. It has certainly has a, you know, a history of, you know, over the past 17 years of setting up, you know, Muslims and, you know, to the infiltrating Muslim community. And I guess my point is what I'm saying, it's such a complex situation.
Right.
You know, who are the heroes, right? And I think that some folks are looking for that. And it's like, who are they? And it's not very easy to identify.
No. And then you've got the authority figures, the president, gaslighting America, telling us,
right,
you know, as,
yeah,
I put it, the sky is green, to the point,
right,
where I look outside and I'm going, no, I know the sky is blue. I see it there. I'm not crazy. But they keep telling me the sky is green. And all,
right,
of his crazy followers are echoing him that the sky is green and that I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think that is so frustrating. Look, it's certainly frustrating for me as a reporter, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I'm trying to, when I've been putting out these stories, publishing these stories, and I do want to make the point that majority of our stories are big investigative stories on Trump Moscow. The colleague of mine and I published the, you know, what we call the definitive story of this Trump Moscow deal. It's based on documents. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the actual text messages exchanged between Michael Cohen and Felix Sater about this particular deal. So, you know, the fact that you have so many anonymous sources coming out and making these bold statements about, you know, what happened, it's, again, I think that, you know, if you have a president saying, don't believe the media, you had a Secretary of Homeland Security saying, you know, don't believe the media, even though they're bearing witness to,
right,
the removal of individuals of migrants and putting them in cages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but don't believe that.
Right.
You know, and,
right,
and there are people who actually are like, okay. So it's frustrating because how do you convince people? It's something I asked, but then I realized that, you know, my job is not to convince anyone. It's to present, as a journalist at least, you know, the facts and as much, you know, information as I can to, you know, hopefully let them believe or to provide them with enough information about what is happening so they can make their own informed judgment.
Right.
But I also think that this is kind of exhausting, right? I mean,
it is.
I think we all do want to see what the end game is. What is going to happen with Mueller? What's he going to do? And I'm not sure if It certainly hasn't been discussed that much, but what happens if he does not do anything that people are coming to expect? There's going to be lots of disappointment, you know, and what does that mean?
Yeah, so, I don't know, and I don't even want to go there now. It's too much to think about, and we are at the end of the hour. Jason Leopold, find him on Twitter, at Jason Leopold, and find him at BuzzFeed.com. Jason, you're a treasure. Thank you so much. It's always great to talk with you, and I thank you for your hard work.
Thanks so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
You too.